All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Beat. This episode is presented by BetMGM, the exclusive betting partner of The Athletic. Sign up at BetMGM.com. Use the promo code THEATHLETICPOD for some great deals. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner, along with Brendan Quinn. Enough of the ads, my man. We've got hoops to talk about today. It's a big day. Brendan double booked himself this morning. First day of college basketball. He's already off schedule. We had to start early. How you doing, my man? Excited?
Let's fucking go, brother. How we doing?
We're good.
Woke up at 3:30. Just juiced. I messaged you. Yeah, I sent you a Gmail at 3:30 in the morning.
I was going to say, I was up at about 1:45 with one of the children. I would have gotten it if you had sent it a couple hours earlier, but it is that time of year. Brendan's favorite time of year, of course, and for many of you, a fond time of year, is college basketball for real gets underway now. And, you know, as is often the case around here, we have a lot to discuss right away because Michigan State never waits to sort of dip its toe into the water. And then Michigan, of course, going to get started a little later. But both teams have a lot on the plate. Where do you want to start here, man? Like, which team? I know Michigan State's playing tonight. So I know we wanted to get into some hoops. Either way, we've got some questions too.
I would start with my feelings, man.
Great. Let's do that.
You know, this is just the best. Everyone is celebrating. Fans coming back.
Right.
In arenas.
I like
it's
that.
It's gonna be. It's gonna be great. I think it's gonna be great for the players.
Yeah.
You know, after last year, that every game just felt so sterile and weird. I don't know how many games you saw in person, if you went to any.
Not but in person, just, but I mean, I saw the football game, so it's the same, I'm sure.
It sucked. Yeah. You know, it's there was something about being inside in like empty, vacant kind of airline hangars.
I agree. Like,
that
Ford Field
just
was like
so
that.
Weird. And you'd have like the benches trying to like
it was depressing.
Drum up fake energy. It was so depressing. Mm-hmm. So I'm just excited, man. And like, everyone's kind of buzzing on Twitter and stuff about the beginning of the season. It all feels like it feels really genuine and, right before this, I was getting, have to respect the alma mater. Right before we came on, I'm looking, I'm like, holy shit, who do the Hawks play?
They got to check it out.
They got Maryland Eastern Shore tonight at 8:00. So I'll be having the second screen going on ESPN Plus. That's a battle of Hawks versus Hawks. Maryland Eastern Shore versus St. Joseph's. Yeah. Yeah, man, I think it's gonna be great. The garden is gonna be rocking.
Right.
Tonight.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I think I needed to remind myself of what it felt like when college football started again with the fans because it was a very important day for all of us that do this job. And I know Colton's going to Madison Square Garden tomorrow.
Yeah.
Or tonight, I should say, his first trip to the garden, which is exciting for him. But yeah, I mean, like for. When you get to go back and see a real crowd, not these neutral site games, but I mean, like when you get to go back for your first Big Ten game, a Michigan State game in a real game in a real atmosphere and walk in and see the people, like I'm excited for you to see that because that's going to be something that I don't think you even quite like.
Yeah,
even
I'm sure.
For me, when we went back to the stadiums for the first time this year, and I think mine was, I guess the Lions actually did a scrimmage, and it was like 10,000 people. That's it. And it was like a bullshit scrimmage where they did nothing, right? And there was 10,000 people in there, but like they were jacked up and they were like rocking and rolling. And it was like, this is kind of cool, And then we go to I think it was the first college game and the building's full. And it's like, okay, for the first 10 minutes, all you're doing is just sitting there being like, I remember what this is like. And I forgot what this is like. It is a very different, and I'm excited for the people that are going to be there too, because and the kids and the coaches and everybody else, because like you said, being inside last year was a level of depressing that I don't think if you weren't there, you can't quite grasp because everyone in the building was trying to make it normal. You know what I mean? Like everyone in the building was trying their best to just act like we weren't in this horrible, awful, terrible situation. And you don't have to do that anymore. And it's like, that's a pretty big deal. So I'm excited for all you guys to see that again. Yeah. Sure.
And it's like, it's everything. It's beyond like obviously the atmosphere and the bands and all that stuff is like, it's so important to what the sport represents. But it's even like the little stuff. I'm going to go to, I'll be at Michigan Buffalo tomorrow night.
Yeah.
And then I'll be at Michigan State EMU on Friday. And like, look, there might be scenarios where I don't know if I'm actually writing about those games. You know what I mean? But I'm going because I need to go.
Need to go. Yeah.
Right? You know what I mean? And a lot of it is for like the little stuff. Like, you know me, like I like to get to a game 2 hours, 90 minutes early and go down and just sit at the court, right? And just I have conversations with people and I talk to people. And, you know, and it's just kind of that reopen lines of communication and kind of get that access again and get that, you know, feel like there isn't just this massive wall, this massive divide between program
not,
and, right. and reporter, right. you know, and that's because that was really hard. It's really hard in terms from everything, generating story ideas to, you know, feeling like you have a real grasp of what's going on, you know, inside the program that you're kind of charged with covering. Like that's and you know these people.
Well, that's what I mean.
You know,
yeah.
It's like
there are people that you know.
Tomorrow night, right? So tomorrow night I'll be down courtside. You know, I haven't probably had a face to face conversation with Martelli in God knows how long.
Exactly.
I haven't had a face to face conversation with John Sanderson in God knows how long. You know, like guys who you've known for a long time. So, like all that. Every last thing.
All
watching
it,
the fans come in. Watching the student
fans.
Section.
Yeah, right.
Watching that student section fill up.
Watching
and everyone getting
react.
Gassed up.
Yeah, to a shot.
You know, seeing the players' families, like, being able to kind of enjoy themselves in a way different atmosphere than last year. You know, being able to hear refs get shit when
that's
the calls are
was,
terrible.
Yeah, that's what it was for me.
You know what I mean?
It was just, like, all the little stuff. It was, like, all the little things came back that you were, like, being able to hear people react to a bullshit call, being able to hear, like, people react to something on the screen, you know, like, the music playing or whatever. Like, because that's another thing. Like, it really did flood me back when we first started the football season to, like, what it was like at the very beginning of 2020, where you're like, this is horrible. You're like, I can't do this. Like, I remember... Yeah, you go in for the first time and you're like, okay, this isn't going to be bad, right? We're going to make this work. And then, like, one quarter goes by and you're like, what the fuck are we doing here? This is the dumbest thing ever. But now you're back and it's like, what it does, though, really, is it feels like a real season. It feels like a real games, a real, and not that last year wasn't, but, like, this felt, you know, it's going to feel like a real season and a real everything again. And, you know, that's just good for everyone involved. Because I think it, you know, especially for the players, you can tell. That was what struck me. I could just tell in the college arena anyway, like, the kids just felt more at home. Like, they felt like this was what they were, this is what I came here to do. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. This feels normal. It feels real. You know, and last year, it never did. And, you know, it's exciting to be able to see them go out there and run around in front of fans again and just have a, have a regular experience,
wild.
You know, yeah.
It's wild when you look at, especially like for the sophomores.
They've never done it. Yeah, exactly.
Who've never done it. You know, like Hunter Dickinson, who should be the big man on campus over there, is finally going to get a
him.
Home game.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
Like,
yeah.
That's going to be really, really cool. And the older guys, too. You know, a guy like Eli Brooks, you know, who's played his whole tenure, you know, at Michigan and is now in his fifth year and gets to kind of see everything come back again.
Yeah.
A guy like. Devontae Jones, right? He played at Coastal Carolina for 3 years, then played in an empty gym next year. Now tomorrow night he's going to walk on the court as a starting point guard for Michigan,
right?
In front of 12,000 people, you know, like it's just wild. So yeah, all that's great. But let's get into it, man.
Yeah, let's get into it. We got
I'm juiced.
Michigan State, Kansas tomorrow. We'll start there with Michigan State, and then we'll get into some Michigan here
tonight, baby.
Tonight. It's Tuesday. Michigan State, Kansas, of course, the Spartans last year was a different year and everything else. But as we've talked about, a lot to sort of, I don't know if prove is the right word, but it feels like a lot to maybe recenter for Michigan State as they're sort of, they've reshuffled some things. What are your thoughts on this one going into this game? And I know this is always a weird time of year for Izzo's teams, but like, this does feel a little different. This doesn't feel, not just because of COVID and everything else, but they're coming off a weird year for them, so...
Right.
Sort of. What's your sort of feel here? Is
and it's
right
and it's always like, you know, for this for the Champions Classic games, you always put so much weight on them just because they're so.
Well, you
want to
see the guts of the team, you know, like what
right,
they have,
right, and it's just and it's the matchup, and it's you know these are teams that have Final Four aspirations and things like that. So to see them play in the opening game, you always want to analyze it way more than you would any other non-conference game, and you consider it way more than any non-conference game.
Right.
In reality,
it's the same.
It's one
right.
game
yeah, right.
that you know when at the end of the year it's. No one's really putting that much weight on what happens in this game. However, a lot can be revealed about Michigan State tonight.
Yeah.
And it is across the board. So, you know, just going, obviously I broke down the game with Dylan yesterday, but, you know, kind of going piece by piece through Michigan State specifically and kind of talking more about them and less about Kansas per se. Like, getting to see Tyson Walker tonight is just, you'll know. Like, you're going to have an idea tonight whether, you, like, he might not have an amazing game, right? But, like, if he is swimming in the deep end and you're just like, I don't see it, you know, I don't see this guy in a month becoming, you know, like, that's an issue. Or if he comes out and he's really steady, you're like, okay, that's something to build on. If he comes out and he's good, well, now you're like, all
right.
They might really have something. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, yeah, you see this guy against Kansas at Madison Square Garden in front of 20,000 people. Like, we're going to have an idea if this guy's got serious game, right?
Yeah.
So let's find out. This is kind of the crazy part of these up transfers. Like,
well,
an all-conference college basketball player last year. One of the best players in his league. One of the hottest point guards in the transfer portal. Kansas wanted him. Mm-hmm. Michigan State wanted him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, well, now let's see. We're going to find out.
And I feel like this is sort of the beauty of, you know, one of these situations for Michigan State, because they always have these games right off the shoot where you're just like, I have no idea what the hell this team is. They don't even know each other. They barely practiced, and we're just going to find out. And, over the years, we know why Izzo does this. And it's not just because, you know, I want to see whatever. He's trying to find out if these guys have any balls. Like, do you have any, like, who has stones on this team? Who's going to flinch? Who's going to piss down their pants? And who's not? And, like, I think that's what you're saying when you're looking at a point guard like this. It's like, hey, is this what you're looking for, I think, in a game like this is, can he, like, reasonably, can he reasonably hang at this level of competition on this stage? And I think that's really all you're looking for, right? I mean, it's like, is he going to be able to function in these moments like he would normally function? And if he can, then I think that's, even if it's sloppy, it's like it'd be a bright spot going forward. Because if he can sort of play on this level, you can work with that.
Like, it's the basic stuff of, like, just being able to run ball screens.
Exactly.
Offense, right? And making good decisions and creating things.
Just don't
and being
get lost.
A formidable option at point guard. Like, they didn't have a point guard last year.
Right.
It's pretty goddamn hard to play.
It's impossible. Yeah, right.
Without a point guard. So, you know, and if it's not, you know, and if he is great, if he's good, amazing, that's, you know, going to be a huge boost. And if he's not, then you... Oh, shit. Right? AJ Hogarth, right? Okay, I think we have an idea what he is. Mm-hmm. I think you have an idea what his ceiling probably is. He could be a serviceable guy. I just don't know if, as a sophomore, he is taking any kind of massive step forward to be a guy who is, give him the ball, let him go for 32 minutes a game. I just don't see that. Like, I you need to see something out of Tyson Walker.
Yeah, it's really it's like, are you going to be an adult here? Are you going to be a grown, are you going to be a grown-up point guard? Are you not going to turn the ball over in careless situations? And are you just going to be able to get us in and out? I think that's kind of what you're looking for, right? And it's not, you're not looking for him to take a game over. You're not looking for him to make six winning plays. It's just like, hey, don't fuck us here. You know what I mean? And I think we can work with that.
Because the residuals of it, it's not just about him. It's about everybody.
That's what I mean, right? Yeah, right.
Joey Hauser is kind of useless unless you have him with a really good point guard.
Right.
Who like so many people were high on Hauser after his redshirt year because we watched him in practice with Cassius Winston.
And he looked pretty good.
So all he was doing was just running ball screens, roll reverse, roll replace, hitting threes, like wide open shots set up by the best point guard in the country. And then you put him out there last year and he's with Rocket Watts, Foster Lawyer, AJ Hogarth. Like, oh, okay, well, what's the point of having Joey Hauser, right? This doesn't make sense. So, like... Walker being good is good for Hauser. Walker being good is good for your shooters on the wings. Mm-hmm. Gabe Brown, Max Christie. These are dudes that can toe the line, right, and hit threes. But you need someone who can get into the teeth of a defense, collapse, draw defenders, kick passes, right, have his head on a swivel, do all these things. And just basic ball movement. I mean, watching Michigan State last year was so arduous. Arduous. Where, you know, if they can just get someone who can kind of start dialing things up again when they're in any kind of half-court set, it's crucial. So between So well, that's enough on the point guard, because there's a lot more here. Like, when you look at the five spot, I need to be convinced this isn't just going to be the same exact thing that it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone can keep telling me Marcus Bingham
is ready to roll. Yeah,
that the light has come on and he has figured out that he's ready to be this thing.
The graveyard of the light has come on, guys.
We'll see. We'll yeah, see. Right. I maybe, you know, maybe Julius Marble's ready to take a step forward. But you know, we're going to be having the conversation again in December of like, why didn't they get a five in the transfer portal? Isn't this position addressed? Which doesn't make for a program like Michigan State, which has thrived with bigs, which has produced some of the best bigs. How is this still kind of the conversation here? You know,
right?
This kind of carousel that's been going on there of 5 minutes of this, 5 minutes of that. You know, like, you hope it's Bingham because everything's there. The pieces are all there.
Well, yeah, it's time.
But can there be 24 minutes?
Now or never, it feels like.
Of sustained good decision making.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't chuck a three. You can't miss a ball screen. You can't do this. You can't do that. You can't get lost. Just play basketball, man. Yep. Dunk the ball, block shots, get rebounds, throw the ball to a guard after you get the rebound, and sprint down court.
Yep.
That's it. Right. That's it, man. And they can survive with that.
I know. I want to ask you about Izzo here while we're on this topic, because that reminded me of all of this really has. You know, he's obviously a different coach than your average coach with the way he sort of interacts with his team. I think we were talking a couple weeks ago when you were talking about one of the stories you did, or at least the one story you did when you followed Tom and you're in the locker room with him before the Michigan game. They didn't have that sort of like, I mean, they did, but they didn't have that connection that they always have last year, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't what it always is. And I would, you know, knowing enough about this situation over the years, I would guess that Tom Izzo is probably like, I did not have a pretty good grasp of where my guys were last year.
Yeah.
Because everything
felt drained.
Strained.
Like, and everything
microwaved.
It was
microwaved.
It might have been a strained year as it was, and then you put COVID on top of it,
yeah,
and they had a bout of it.
Yes.
You know?
Right.
I mean, people forget last year started with Izzo with COVID. Getting COVID
yeah,
the week
right.
before this, right. 2 weeks before the season started, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was a really hard year
yeah.
on everybody. And that goes that's right
reasons.
Down the line. Through,
right.
through the staff, you know, Stevens, Garland, like, guys had really hard years.
Yeah.
on the personal side of things. And everything was just constantly, and it was like, everything has just been that way for a while, and it was from the previous year, right? It was from what happened with Cassius.
Cassius is still
through the way that that year ended, right through that off season, right into last year. There's just been so much, and you hope, you know, for Michigan State's sake, that tonight is kind of a reset.
Well,
all right, that's in the past. Right now, everything forward,
yeah.
And you know, the staff's been shuffled. There's new faces. There's new ideas. There's some new bodies. There's fresh talent. A guy like Max Christie walking in, uber talented.
Yeah,
probably the best overall basketball player on the team.
Yeah,
new guy.
Yeah,
fresh blood. Jaden Akins, spark plug guy. Like, this guy, you're gonna love watching Akins play.
Yeah,
he's one of the few options they have of a guy who will get the ball and he will dribble and will attack the shit out of the basket. Like, he's got eyes on the rim. He is going to be a son of a bitch for a while here, and he's going to be fun to watch. So, you know, a lot of newness is good and much needed.
It is, and I think that
for this team, and a new point guard on top of it.
So much too about Izzo is, like, I feel like what makes them go and what gets them out of the funks that other teams can't get out of is sort of his ability, uniquely so, to just sit with a guy and unpack whatever's going on with his life and, you know, sort of get to the bottom of that. And I feel like, I don't know this, but just looking at last year on the outside, look, that was impossible, right? I imagine those moments just could not happen for all the COVID reasons and everything else. And I know you've talked to Tom probably many times, more than you probably wanted to over the last year.
There were a lot of disconnects, yeah,
right,
though.
And
a lot of it went from
and
personnel
for him,
to just...
that never happens, right? So I imagine this was a pretty... Yeah, like, so talk about that whole thing and kind of how you what what your sort of
as strained as it looked on the court at mm-hmm. times, I think was about as strained as it was internally.
It had to have
between
been.
The relationships and you know, I don't look. It's not rock. This is not
just a. It's just a natural.
Difficult to imagine the fact that like a guy like Rocket Watts. Like I didn't know if that guy. I didn't know if he was coming back after Christmas last year.
Yeah, right.
You know,
Tom
what I mean?
Probably didn't either.
Right, and you know, like the way that year was spelling out, like transfer was on the table. People were talking about him transferring in January. Like I was.
It was like that for everybody. Yeah,
happening about that. You know, and. You know, Aaron Henry kind of being in this impossible position of being asked to do everything on a team that really wasn't functioning. And now he's kind of playing out of positions. Meanwhile, he came back for that year.
Right.
You Could've know, left. He wanted to leave after his sophomore year and go into the draft and kind of chase that. And he opted to come back to be able to expand his game and do this and do that. And he never really
didn't work, yeah.
It just never really formulated, right? Mm-hmm. So you want to talk about strain and stress? How much was anyone happy?
No,
in that
that's
program
what I mean.
Last year?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Felt
right?
like Michigan football to a degree.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's a good point, and I think just a different energy around that place. Like I wonder how much this starts to kind of look like.
That's
Michigan
what I'm thinking.
State again,
yeah, right?
You know, and it goes from everything from the way that. Those relationships exist to the way that they play.
Yeah.
Like this team
to the way they play. Like, exactly. Yeah.
Like go getting out and running again and getting out and scoring, you know, buckets in transition.
Feeding off the crowd, you know, stuff like that.
Feeding off the crowd and like, yeah, there's nothing worse than floor slapping in an empty gym.
Yeah, right.
Can't
like, my God, like, oh, if we never have to see that stuff again, right? Like floor slapping in an empty gym. Like the, you know, the hype video in the empty gym. Like, oh, my God, please don't.
So bad.
So yeah, I'm excited to see that. Like, I think that I kind of half expect Izzo to sort of walk out on the court tonight and just start, like, sobbing at the national anthem. Seeing all the people in the crowd, you know, there's going to be the band's going to be playing the fight song. Like, I mean, I got that sense, you know, when Austin and I wrote that story about Michigan football in the summer, you know, mm-hmm. and all the changes they went through. You know, and when we started getting ready to talk about all this, I look at Izzo and Michigan State basketball in almost the same way that I did Harbaugh and football, with not everything, but just the way that they operate with the guys, with the players. Like, they're not, those coaches are not going to be at their best unless they can get, like, in a room with a guy and sit down and talk to the kid for 4 hours if they have to. Lock the door, sit in there, and you can't do that in COVID. And, like, that's college athletics. Like that is so much about what the sport is. And to not have that really did make it feel like, and I know we're probably on a tangent, whatever, I don't care because it's back now, but like that, it didn't feel like college basketball just in the same way that it didn't mm-hmm. feel like college football. And Izzo is college basketball in a lot of, you know, around here he is. And like to be able to see a guy like that be back in his element, whether you like them or not, I think is one of those moments that's pretty cool. And I think that's something that everyone will get to see again. I'm excited for that because I forgot what that was like when football started again. And it was only a couple months ago. But like to have that again with college basketball. And then to have it again later in the year, to know that the tournament, and I know there were fans there last year, but it's not the same. You know, to have all these things on the table again is pretty cool because it's just not the same sport. These are not the same sports without the people, you know. And pretty neat stuff.
Yeah, like I didn't have too much difficulty watching the NBA. Like,
no, it was pretty. You know, like, NFL, yes.
It was fine. It was fine.
Got
you know,
through
whatever.
It.
But yeah, I mean, college basketball, it just
didn't wasn't work. The same.
So, and the good part, especially, is that with this game being at 7, you can watch this game and get your fill of returning to college basketball and then turn it off before the Duke-Kentucky game in the nightcap, which is going to be a nauseating display of Coach K. It's going to seem like a wake. It's going to be brutal.
Oh, God, that's right.
It's going to be brutal.
Well,
I'll still watch it, obviously.
Anything to take the focus off of the Kentucky player who his NIL, did you see this yesterday? His NIL foundation is now tax-exempt with the government, so he doesn't have to report taxes.
There's a big move. I want to know the lawyer in Lexington that came up with that.
It's probably Cal's lawyer. Calipari's probably been doing the same bullshit for 50 years. I don't have to pay taxes. I donate 10%. Anyway, on to Michigan here. We've talked a little Michigan State. Michigan will start the season, excuse me, in a little less of a action-packed way, of course, but not really, because there's a ton of talent on this team and a ton of players, as we all saw in the, or some folks saw in the opener there, or the exhibition opener, I should say, last Friday with Wayne State. Michigan, a ton of stuff, man, like a lot of new, but a lot of familiar, but sure, also a lot of new. And I think that that's where I wanted to talk to you here. Like, some of the new faces here that people are going to see this year at, on Michigan's roster. Like, I know that we talked about when Juwan Howard got here, the talent level was going to go up, right? And it did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Dickinson is different. You know, we haven't really seen a guy like that. I feel like this is going to be something like the dudes they're bringing in now here feels a little bit different. So I guess just sort of set the table about what we're going to see.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of wild because in a normal,
this feels
normal
like
year, but
yeah,
in other years, you know, when you see a class like this, you would be kind of playing out scenarios of, you know, a Kobe Bufkin,
yeah,
having a major role, right?
Just that's what I mean. Being like a
profile coming in, a guy like Freddie Collins, yeah, like, oh, or Frankie
yeah,
Collins. You'd have this, like, oh man, look at his recruiting ranking. He's going to play a lot.
A
like
starter.
Some of these guys aren't, yeah, even going to play that much. You know,
right?
Like, it's right. It's they got just loads of talent, and this whole, you know, bring in the grad transfer point guard move. I don't know if this is like intentionally the model.
It has, you know, to be now. I think it is.
But if it works again, then you probably just stick with this. Just
I think
this,
so.
This can work, you know.
You got to hit it right. But yeah, right.
Some potential point guards you might be recruiting might get a little turned off after a while. But if it works, it works. Right. So, but yeah, to your point though, guys like Caleb Houston and Musa Diabate, who are, you know, lottery. Lottery pick level talents being injected into a roster with the stable kind of bookend type pieces,
mm-hmm,
like Dickinson and Eli Brooks, right?
Yeah.
And that's taking out Devontae Jones, who I think will be fine. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of a Tyson Walker like scenario, right? A big time up transfer. You have to see what he can do before you have major,
yeah,
confidence in what this team can be. But Eli Brooks and Hunter Dickinson, pretty good.
They're all Americans.
Starting post,
yeah, right?
Right?
Yeah,
for a college basketball.
All
team.
American now, starters. Yeah.
Now you put, I don't know if Eli Brooks is an all American,
but
Eli
enough.
Brooks is going.
Close
he's
enough.
Going to be, you know, an honorable mention all conference guy and be one of the best defensive guards in the league, and he's going to make
senior point guard
63 pointer. You, yeah, know, like whatever. So yeah, that's. This is the difference of this version of Michigan basketball, is
right,
that you're just you can have some older guys, and then you're just now bringing in McDonald's All-Americans and putting them around them. And it's not the crazy thing is that you just don't see this in the Big Ten,
right?
Really, it's really the league where this is kind of going to be an outlier thing if this is how it looks, because the Big Ten just really does, you know. Michigan State will bring in one here and there.
Right.
Indiana will bring in one here and there. And now Michigan is just bringing in carloads of McDonald's All-Americans. It's your talent level is just going to be, you're always going to have a gap. And,
yeah,
you know, the staff has proven it can coach. Now they got the talent. They've got an All-American at the five. I don't see any reason why you shouldn't be having, you know, Final Four,
yeah,
hopes and dreams if you're in Ann Arbor.
You've got an All-American at the five, and you've got this young man, Mr. Diabate. How do I pronounce Moose's name here?
Musa Diabate.
Okay, so tell me about Moose here, because this kid looks...
Oh, is that your... Oh, I like the nickname.
But
that's what I heard.
I heard Ed Kongerski call him Moose on one of his things.
Okay.
And I saw on the pronunciation chart, Musa. That's how you say it.
Yes.
So I wanted to say his name.
Yes.
Moose seems like a pretty good name for a guy who's 8 foot tall and can run like this. Like, I watched a couple of clips of this kid, and I wanted to kind of get... I know you wrote a big story on him, and if people haven't read that, go check that out. But, like, this is a pretty special, a pretty unique looking player here. What are your sort of expectations, I guess, realistically for a year like this, or do you even know? And I mean, like, what does this guy do for this team? I mean, where does he fit?
Yeah, I mean, based on his size and his skill set, I think you can have a kind of baseline of what they can get out of this guy this year. And it's funny you call him Moose, because I just went to Yellowstone Park and I was really hoping to see one, and I didn't. So I'll just go to Chrysler tomorrow night. I mean, based on his length, athleticism, size, he's a game changer defensively. Not only in the fact that he can, you know, play at the rim, defend the rim, be a potentially elite shot blocker. Not potentially. He should be an elite shot blocker. But he can also kind of get out and switch one through five. And they're going to use him that way. And he gives them versatility in the front court that just few programs can imagine having. Now, he's not going to, you know, when he's at the four playing alongside Dickinson, you know, he's not exactly a shooter who can kind of stretch you out and be that stretch four. If you're a defense, you give him that. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he can just be dynamic in terms of when the ball gets into his hands. It could be a wild-ass turnover.
Yeah.
Or it could be a wild-ass go dunk on some poor bastard. You know what I mean? But the fact that he can give you minutes at the four, he can give you minutes at the five, you know, the whole the death scenario of in a big game, Hunter Dickinson gets in foul trouble, Michigan's screwed.
Right.
Well, no, not
anymore. Yeah, right.
Diabate can play the five. Yeah. You know, that's fine. And Brandon Johns is still going to be your starting four.
Right.
And so you can kind of use this guy as this, you know, Swiss Army knife kind of down there. And that's just an enormous commodity. But I don't think there's any reason to not think that he can't walk in the door and be a defensive game changer, an elite shot blocker, a very good rebounder, very good offensive rebounder. And yeah, I mean,
this is one of these guys that you're just going to, we don't know. I don't think that you fully know what could be until.
Yeah. Like, I don't know if he's the, if he's a surefire.
I mean that in a really
lottery pick next year. I don't know.
Because like it could be something crazy. You just don't know. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those, it reminds me, it's not the same guy, but it reminds me of when Mitch McGarry came here and it was like, you don't know what it could be. He could be, you know, it's going to depend on some things. But, like, if it clicks and, you know, a couple things go right, this could be something that you've never really seen before, right? Like, I mean, this is what it feels like with a talent like this because, I mean, you look at the roster and there's just not a lot of stuff that you're like, boy, they're missing this or they don't have that or they don't have this. So I would ask you, and that with all that said, because they've got a couple guys on this team that I think you could say that about, like, Houston, you know, I don't know what he could be like one of the best players in the country. I have no idea.
For sure.
So
yeah, he's on the Naismith watch list.
So I would ask you this. Right. I know that it's early and it's November, but whatever. I don't care. We didn't have a real season last year. What? Mm-hmm. What's the expectation here for this group? Because when I'm looking at them from the outside looking in, this looks like a Final Four or I don't know. I mean, you can't say that about a team because it's hard to do that.
Yeah,
this has got to be what the level is at, I assume, the whole year, or they're going to be disappointed. Like, just in terms of day-to-day, like, we need to be playing at that level, competing at that level.
So, yes, I think talent-wise, and you look at the roster that, yes, you are thinking about a Big Ten championship
all year.
And the final and the final weekend, right? Yeah. Playing on Monday is the goal. Yeah. So, that's all well and good. And then you also have to stop yourself and say, this program, the program loses Franz Wagner, who is currently fucking a beast in the NBA. He's unbelievable. Yeah. So much of what he did. Actually, you know what? This goes for all these guys. So say all of them, right? Franz, Shaundi Brown, Isaiah Livers.
Yeah.
And Mike Smith.
Huge guys.
It is talent, age,
pillars.
Experience, leadership.
Right.
Responsible, like you were talking about adults earlier. Those guys were like adults.
Yeah, losing Livers, you know, is what like I mean? Losing Cassius Winston. It's the same thing.
You know, like I don't know if I'd say
from
the same thing.
From a locker room standpoint, I think that's very similar.
Yeah, yeah. The notion of like losing all of that and just being like, whoop, pick things up and keep rocking and rolling.
That's what
pretty
I mean.
Goddamn hard. Pretty goddamn hard. So it's like you have to slow your stroll a little bit. But yeah, like the talent is the talent. Mm-hmm. If they didn't bring back Eli Brooks, right? I think that would you'd start to really dial things down. But the fact that like you know what Eli Brooks is, mm-hmm. like, you know at minimum if he does exactly what he does did last year,
yeah, right.
pretty damn good, man. And Hunter Dickinson is Hunter Dickinson. And I don't care if he can't score with his right hand or if he can't shoot threes.
Whatever.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, right.
Still going to be basically an all like right. first team.
Going to be pretty good. Yeah, right.
Pretty damn good. Okay. So, you know, he doesn't need to turn into goddamn Hakeem Olajuwon dream shaking and shit. Like, if he just bullies dudes because he's 7'1",
yeah.
265 pounds, whatever, good enough, right? Mm-hmm. And if he loses to Kofi Coburn, so be it. You can still go 15-5 in the league,
right?
Pretty damn good. So, yeah, there's like the to borrow one of Dylan's expressions, like the floor is high for this.
It seems like it, yeah.
You know,
right?
Yeah. So, like, I just don't really see scenarios where like they just suck.
Yeah, they're just
just don't remotely live up to potential. It, like, I just don't see that happening.
It does feel like this is a little different in that there should be a baseline level of expectation of, like, there's too much talent here to, you know, mm-hmm. at a level of, like, if we're seeing it slough to a point, right, where it's like that's – and I think that that's a little different for Juwan entering this year, where it's like you said, you're losing leadership and you're also, like, mm-hmm. you're going to deal with expectations now that you have never dealt with. And, you know, that's really the another layer here, I guess – right. As it goes forward, that we don't know the answer to, but that's another thing, I guess, to watch.
Like, look at it this way, right? If, let's say, Kobe Bufkin, mm-hmm. Isaiah Barnes were at most other Big Ten programs, they're probably playing 20.
Yeah, they're minutes, starting, and yeah, right.
Maybe more, mm-hmm. right? Maybe starting, whatever. They're like the eighth and ninth guys.
Right.
At Michigan right now. So, like, that's the talent level. It's
crazy.
It is a lot.
And I think that the thing that gives them the best shot here is that you've got, and I think I said this and I caught myself when I was saying it, like, the expectations and pressure. Juwan Howard has seen every expectation and pressure any human being could ever see on a basketball court. Mm-hmm. So, like, every time I tell myself that, I'm like, well, you know, I mean, this guy did play on the Fab Five, for fuck's sake.
Right.
I think he knows
right.
what pressure looks like. So,
and has also learned a lot as
right.
a coach,
yeah.
right? Like, I would imagine knowing Juwan, yeah. Or at least not, I don't pretend to know him, but
been
like,
around
knowing
it, yeah,
how right. he operates and how he kind of conducts his business, like, that, and I would love to have that conversation about it, like, him going back and deconstructing that UCLA game as a coach
yeah.
who was coaching in his first uh-huh. Elite Eight.
Right.
And like crawling into his brain and being like, as a coach, I wish I had done
yeah.
A, B, C, D. These things that you know, you build this experience and you understand it more and more and more the more you do it.
Right.
You know, at the end of the day, he's a third year head coach.
Yeah.
He's going into his third year.
Right.
So he's going to get better.
I think he's
going to become a better head coach.
Yeah.
And he's already been wildly successful through two full seasons.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, there's a ton to like here. Could it go bad? Could there be, you know, I don't like if I've done this exercise, right, where you play out the scenarios of this team underperforming. It's not impossible to get there.
Yeah.
Right. Devontae Jones might not be good. Okay.
Yeah,
we'll
no,
see.
Right. Exactly.
He could be. I mean, he's going to give them great defensive play, he's going to give him great length on the defensive end, but like we still need to see him run ball screen offense, and you don't just replace Mike Smith. And Mike Smith was a 44% three-point shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Devontae Jones, not known as a shooter.
Yeah.
We'll see, you know, he can make them, but we'll see if you have to respect him, right? We'll see if
right.
Big Ten teams have to respect him, or if it can kind of be used against, if his shooting could be used against Michigan's offense, you know?
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. Caleb Houston,
mm.
is he a guy who
he looks pretty good?
Is, you know, what is, but what are the ups and downs going to look
like? That's what, yeah.
Right? How many 2-for-11 games?
There you go. Like,
gonna
the
be,
bad stretches.
He's going to shoot and shoot and
yeah,
shoot.
Right. I don't think he's like, going to stop.
He is a NBA
right. volume
level
shooter.
I talk about his, when he committed,
mm-hmm.
And going through and just, you know, watching him, you're just like, oh my Lord, like this guy first of all, like, they barely need him because, you know, he was basically playing on a high school team at Mount Verde.
Yeah.
But you're just watching him play, and you're just like, oh, my God. I mean, this guy's clearly going to be probably a lottery pick, and he's projected as a top 10 pick. But then talking to his coach, why am I blanking on that? Kevin Boyle? Is
that right? That sounds right. Mount Verde, yeah.
It's... I haven't been.
Kevin Boyle was the
So
that sounds right.
But when we were talking, he's like, "Here's the difference. Like, a lot of kids can come out and make threes."
Yeah.
He's like, "The thing about Caleb is the reason the scouts love him is he can shoot going to his left,
off the dribble,
going to his right, with his feet not set, coming off a screen, coming off the bounce, running in transition. Like, he's just one of these guys who gets his shoulders squared no matter what.
Just throw it up wherever.
And it is just a feathery, very pretty shot.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've theorized, like, he's going to probably be the second highest usage player on this team.
I would think so.
And
we'd almost say, I mean, it makes sense.
But, you know, an interesting comparison is if you look at... I'm repeating myself on this. I don't know if I said it on this podcast or the other one, but like Duncan Robinson's first year at Michigan, he came out of the gates, and was just unconscious.
I remember
it was just outrageous.
Shooting like 65%.
Yeah, the first half of that year,
people were like, "Holy shit, this guy's never gonna miss." Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, right, exactly. And
then he did,
and it was amazing. And then
he started missing.
And then the second half of the year.
Yeah, it was terrible. He couldn't hit anything.
He shot like 33%, you know, and he was still putting up those shots. But like, that's kind of look, Caleb Houston as a freshman is better than Duncan Robinson was as a first year player at Michigan, without a doubt. So I'm just saying as using that as kind of a proxy of when you're relying on jump shooting, right?
Yeah.
So we'll see, but I mean, he could be incredible. He could be an All American caliber guy.
Yeah.
But he's also a freshman. Right. So if you want to get into that idea of, you know, talking people down.
That's what, yeah, it's
a little
be
bit,
a lot.
You know, okay, well, you know, maybe if you're banking on that, that's something that doesn't go, or you get an injury or whatever it may be, or, you know, maybe later in the year you say, man, it would be really good if his team had some, you know, more experienced depth at the guard positions, and they don't have it because these other freshmen just aren't kind of ready. Like, it's not impossible, right? So,
I think the thing to remember with Michigan is that you've got a group of a bunch of really high achievers, or, you know, guys that are going to be, they're young. A lot of them are super young. There's going to be a mental component to that team that Juwan and the staff are going to have to sort of navigate that we haven't really seen yet or whatever, because when you have a bunch of kids that talented, that are all capable, you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be mental ups and downs of youth.
Well,
like,
and they have experience,
but still, you know.
But they also have 10 scholarship players who are freshmen and sophomores.
Yeah, and it's going to be hard. You know, it's going to be ups and downs, and that's where it's important though, because you have a guy like Eli. That's why I think a guy like Eli Brooks is an All-American because of what he gives you, in that area of, you know. Off the court, being able to take a guy aside like a Houston or one of these kids who's just, he's going to be in the lottery at some point, but like right now he's not there and he's got to calm down, right? Like, those are the moments that I think oftentimes make or break teams like this. And I'm curious to see sort of how that goes. We do have questions today. I know you've got, you're up against the gun. So let's get some of these questions in here. Joe B gets into Devontae Jones. If Devontae Jones plays at a borderline all conference level, how far does Michigan go, and does it become the norm to pair a grad transfer with a freshman point guard from here on out? And I think that latter part is as interesting as the first part for me. So I want you to answer both.
I mean, I think we got into it already on Devontae. And if he's an all conference guard, well, shit, it's Illinois. Probably going at it, maybe Purdue going at it again for the conference championship. Like, I think those three are going to kind of beat the piss out of each other either way, right?
Sounds like it.
But if Devontae Jones is that good, then they might be a caliber above those two. Mm-hmm. So, and we'll see. I mean, that's kind of I don't know.
Not the, but the formula here, though.
The formula is an that's the interesting question, though, because you know, you got a guy like Frankie Collins, right? Who in theory is he's looking at next year as okay. Well, now I get the keys next year, right?
Yeah,
that's why I came here.
It's like a quarterback all of a sudden, right? Yeah,
right. And I'm sure Zeb Jackson was thinking the same way
right.
around this time. You know, earlier in his career, mm-hmm. and suddenly he's not very much in the rotation picture, and is. You know, they talked about, well, okay, I don't know if he's a point guard. Maybe move him off the ball a little bit more, kind of use him as a shooter. We'll see. But, yeah, I mean, if it works again, a lot of it depends on who comes available and if they want him.
Yeah, right.
Right? But, yeah, if they go 2-for-2, suddenly this has to be a destination spot if you are Joe Blow at whoever's the point guard of Maryland Eastern Shore who's going to torch the Hawks tonight, you know, at the end of the year.
If you're Yale's point guard.
Conference player of the year, and he wants to go go play in the Big Ten. Michigan would look pretty damn attractive.
Maryland Eastern Shore. Jesus. These poor coaches at these. I mean, unbelievable. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Like, you look at that's a great point.
It is.
Like,
it's
a guy like Bill Cohen, who's the head coach at Northeastern, who, like, a lot of people consider, like, one of the good guys in college basketball. He has this dude, Tyson Walker.
Brutal,
like,
man.
These are the guys these coaches are killing themselves for. Because you're like, you know, this is the – this wins you a conference. This gets you into the NCAA tournament. And then the dude just like,
bye.
Peace, going to Michigan State. Like,
see ya.
And you can't blame the kid.
No, no.
Because, you know, if Michigan State tried to hire Bill Cohen, I'm pretty sure he would bolt from Northeastern. Right. So, but anywho, I don't know. And, I mean, I think as much of the recipe is determined by Devontae Jones' success, I think it's just as determined by Frankie Collins' success.
Right, yeah.
Because if he shows the flashes this year that gives them confidence of this guy's going to be a dude next year, then you're comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
And maybe you use your grad transfer. Maybe you're more inclined to go get yourself a center to replace Hunter Dickinson and potentially Musa Diabate, right? But if Frankie Collins goes in and struggles this year and, you know, like, shooting is a significant deficiency, so he's going to need to be an elite play creator, right? We'll find out if he is, but if you're not seeing it, then you better go get yourself a point guard, and they will.
Yeah, I think it's several years now, I think we've all thought this was a smart move by the team. You know, Texas Tech was the first team to really, I guess, maybe popularize it in that case when it worked. But I mean, even because we have seen it when it didn't work the way that they envisioned it, but it still ended up when Jaron Simmons came to Michigan, right? Like,
yes.
I don't hate these moves even if they don't work, because he ended up being a pretty valuable piece to that team. Not necessarily because of what he gave them on the court. I mean, he had a couple nice days. I think he had a nice game in a tournament, but like, it's another mature voice in a room where, you know, they ended up going with a younger point guard that year, but you ask the guys on that team, like Xavier or anybody else, they tell you that Simmons helped a ton. He was another older guy that, like, so I think that this is I look at it like the quarterbacks, like it's gonna force your younger point guards that come into programs to be at a higher level faster, which I don't think is a bad thing, because that's the job.
Mm-hmm.
That's the position. Mm-hmm. You want to be a point guard kid? Well, fucking deal with it, because you're gonna have to deal with a lot of stuff. And like, I don't hate that.
And how many successful Big Ten freshman point
guards
do
you see?
They are, you can count them on one hand in the last 5 years. Right?
So, you get them in here, you sort of reset their own expectations about themselves, because like you said, they all come in thinking they're going to be that guy. Every one of them.
Right.
So, I don't hate, I like this. I've liked it since we've seen it start. Even when it hasn't worked, I've actually liked this, because I think if you can get, like you said, you've got to want the kid, and it's got to be the right fit and all this, personality-wise. And that's what it's been every time we've seen it happen. But
chemistry thing's huge.
Every time.
You have to have.
But every time I've seen one of these things happen, even if the kid ends up not being like a stud on the court, it's like, it was a good ad, because like, it helps your younger player that you're trying to develop. I think it's almost like a win-win if you can get it right with the personality. You can't take a shithead. Right, it can't be like an asshole or whatever that you're bringing in here,
mm-hmm.
obviously. Mm-hmm. But like, if you do it right, even if the kid's not like Mike Smith, he can give you a benefit that we just used to not see, you know, in previous years.
Yep.
That I think is really good.
Yep.
So,
okay, I love this question.
from Jason.
Okay.
Who would win a pickup basketball game between the Big Ten East and West football coaches?
So
okay. I took 10 minutes before all right, we hopped on.
You got a starting five for each side.
I charted this out, all right?
Here we go.
Okay, so if we're putting out the squads.
Yeah, for the East and the West, okay.
So obviously the East,
yeah.
Ryan Day, Mel Tucker, Harbaugh, James Franklin, mm-hmm. Mike Loxley, Tom Allen, Greg Schiano.
Oh, God.
Okay, interesting mix.
Yeah, not great, but okay.
In the West, we got Paul Chryst, PJ Fleck, Jeff Brohm, Kirk Ferentz, Brett Bielema, Pat Fitzgerald,
Bielema.
Scott Frost.
Oh, God! This is going to be...
First of all, this would be an amazing game.
The worst game ever played, first of all.
And you know what? I'll tell you what. These coaches should have to go and play a game, and I'll tell you why. Because these assholes, anytime they have any big announcement to make, what do? They go to a basketball
it's
game.
It's true.
And they get the mic... Yeah. They get the mic, they do it at halftime, or they get introduced when they're...
Yeah,
right. I remember Greg Schiano shows up at Rutgers Seton Hall. It's the biggest biggest non-conference game, and he's talking football.
He hijacks the whole thing. Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. Poor Steve Peichel sitting over there, like...
Yeah, right. Trying to win a game here.
On the planet. Yeah, right. It's like, hey, man, could you get the hell out of here?
Yeah.
But, all right, so let's break down the East a little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like James Franklin would be the guy that you want to see suck
at basketball,
but is pretty
he's
goddamn.
Probably
good.
Actually pretty good. Yeah, right.
He's probably pretty good. He's like that guy that you know, that guy you don't like.
Yeah.
And then you play basketball, and you're like, man, I really hope he sucks. And then you see him hit like his first pull up jumper, and he looks really good. You're like, ah, goddamn it, he can play. That is definitely James Franklin, you know? Like, he's a former quarterback.
I was going to say, Franklin and Harbaugh are the two guys that are probably going to have to start because they're going to keep the ball moving. They're not going to get beat on defense, and they're not going to give up a lot of cheap stuff on the glass. So they're going to have to be in the game, whether you like 100%. It or not.
Yeah, right. Harbaugh's going to be elbows.
Whether you like
and
it or
deflected
not.
Deflected passes. Yeah. Yeah, floor burns.
Harbaugh, they're going to yell at each other. Every trip down, scream and yell, fight over the ball. But you know what? You're going to have him on the floor. So I agree with that. Both those guys.
I think Tucker's interesting here.
Yeah.
I think Mel Tucker, I could imagine being kind of a son of a bitch. Yeah. I want to see him and Pat Fitz bodying up against each other.
I like those guys as your backcourt, actually. But like if they going against each other maybe would be your, because East-West. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I like Mel as a guard here. What do you think?
Mel is a guard.
Mel is a lead guard, maybe. I like that.
That's true. I mean, I think he played D-back.
Yeah, he was a D-back
at Wisconsin. So that translates to a guard in basketball.
Yeah, and Harbaugh's got a little more height, right? So, like, and Franklin, I think Franklin does too, actually. But, like, yeah, I like Mel as a guard there.
Schiano just seems like...
I put him in there too. I mean, he's going to punch somebody in the face before the game.
Old blockhead. He played linebacker at Bucknell. It's a big old... You know, guy who like he sets a screen and just puts you in the hospital.
Schiano's a 6.
Dislocate. Yeah. Like he dislocates Scott Frost's shoulder on a screen.
Yeah, right. He's going to be the first guy off the bench. Yeah, I think coming in, yeah, roughing guys up. We got fouls we have to give. And the Big Ten East is just going to be about defense, I think, because not a lot of finesse going on out here.
Ryan Day, I feel like he's kind of one of those, you know, he's another former quarterback. So he's probably, I could see him being a little kind of
creative
spark
guy
plug
too.
Point guard.
Yeah, shooting guard maybe for Ryan Day.
Yep.
I like that. Another backcourt.
But Franklin is jacking the shit out of some shots.
Mel as the one, Day as the two, Franklin as the three, Schiano as the four, and then Harbaugh as the five. Because I think Harbaugh's probably the tallest of that group, right?
Fair.
So I like that.
Fair.
And I don't know, who did I miss there? Who did I leave out?
On
the East.
Mike Loxley.
Yeah, Loxley's older, I think, right? I don't know if
he's
Loxley,
like 50-something.
But I guess, Loxley's probably pretty good too, to be honest. He's been around the block. Loxley probably knows how to get a few buckets. He's been around the block a time or two. So I like him coming off the bench. Tom Allen, I don't, I got to tell you.
I'm not seeing much out of Tom Allen here.
Tom Allen's going to help us out in strategy and like
he can coach and give everyone a pump up.
I like that, a pump up. Yeah, right.
So on the West, I mean, Paul Chryst, I'm picturing Stanley from The Office.
Yes, yeah. Just dribbling around in circles, not knowing what's going on. Right. So
the interesting one here. So Fleck is going to be fast as shit.
Yep. Yeah.
And he's going to be Brad that Davison. Annoying Johnny Tryhard, the dude who in a pickup game is like playing defense way too intense. And you're would you get the fuck away
PJ
from me,
Fleck
man?
Is like, a Wisconsin point guard. He's Brad Davison, and he will be the starting point guard for the Big Ten West, obviously.
But he's like, I mean, he played wide receiver in the NFL,
didn't
he?
He's a good athlete. Cough. Yeah.
He's just going to be sprinting around some of these guys. So
Fleck is going to have like 13 steals a game in this.
And lots of layups. Lots of layups on the other end as you know, Mike Locksley's trying to get back on.
Yeah, Locksley's not going to get back either, I don't think. He's just going to let that go. I would assume.
Scott Frost, I kind of see as like a farm boy shooter.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
You know?
Like a Ricky Rowe from Blue Chips.
Yeah, like... Scott Frost. I don't have his bio. I imagine if you look, it
he was
up,
a great
like,
athlete
Scott,
too.
You know? Scott Frost also scored 1,400 points in high school basketball. I'd be like, yeah, sure, I could.
Big time athlete. Frost is your three over there. I think he's a good athlete. He was. Yeah.
Now Kirk Ferentz.
Jesus.
Did you ever play with like the old man set shot?
Yeah,
guy?
The guy who just like
the guy who
always
who has,
hits
like,
glass.
The cut off shirt, and you got like the old man pits are just all over the place. He's all sweaty. He rubs against you.
Always
and
hits
gross.
Glass. He never scores without the backboard. That guy. Yeah. That's fair. He is always off glass. He never scores unless it's off the window every single time. Mm-hmm. Hook shot, probably. Right? Coming in.
Yep.
Coming in, just being an unorthodox. We don't know how to defend this guy. Like, I like that.
Set shot. Right? Yeah. A set shot. Yep.
Off the bench.
Pat Fitzgerald, I mean, that guy, I'm picturing his shorts are just too short.
Yep, I think so
they're
too.
Dangerously short.
I put him back there with Fleck and let him terrorize your backcourt. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a son of a bitch.
The shorts are too short.
Bielema's a former nose guard, I believe, and I think that pretty much describes him as a basketball player, too.
Yeah, I like Bielema as your gigantic center who's just, like, belly-bopping everybody out of the way, and... We've all he's the Krautwig guy from what was that kid that we saw Loyola had, remember? Cameron Krautwig.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, he's like
okay.
That's Bielema. Yeah. Dancing bear.
Okay. I don't know. Does Jeff Brohm do anything for you?
I actually was gonna say that. Brohm was a quarterback too, and was good, and was a creative the Brohm family in Louisville is a very creative group. So I actually like Jeff Brohm, I think. I think he'd be like a shooting guard, maybe. Or like a savvy scorer, possibly.
Right. So, overall, I think they're pretty even. But here's the scenario that I see playing out.
Man.
The scenario that I see playing out is that the East brings Dan Campbell as a ringer. And Dan Campbell is that tight end.
It's over.
That Tony Gonzalez, Mo Alley Cox, Antonio Gates tight end. Basketball savant.
Whoever signs Campbell. Yeah, whoever signs Campbell's winning. Because when Chris and I did the story on Campbell, we talked to those guys that roomed with him. They were like, you wouldn't fucking believe what this guy was like as a basketball player when he showed up.
Oh, really?
To Texas A&M at 18 years old, at 6'6", like, because he was light. He was like 220 pounds back then. He was like a thin, in shape guy, and he could run, like, apparently. So I like that. I don't hate that. Whoever signs Campbell as a ringer is getting this thing done. So that's going to be up to whoever, but that's a good...
Campbell's walking in right before tip-off, and the East team saying, we'll take him.
I'm not guarding Dan Campbell. No way.
And they win.
Yeah, you can have your points. So. I like it. I like that. That's a good... and I think that's a good way to wrap us up here, is you've got a lot on the plate today, my man.
Do we have anything else on these questions that are... particularly noteworthy?
I don't know if we got any on there that wasn't already picked up on. And if we didn't, we can get back into them at another date. But I think we got all the ones that were that we hadn't touched on in the show. So,
all right.
Either way.
Very good.
That was good. All right. That was good. Excited for hoops, man.
Enjoy the season, everyone. Well, next week, we'll be back talking football.
Well, we can talk both, I guess. We can talk whatever comes up from here on out.
Do you have any parting thoughts on
Yeah, I mean, football? We didn't talk football today. I'm Colton and I are going to do something on Michigan State later in the week on some of the issues and good or, you know, issues great and small, maybe some that are or aren't as big a deal as you think. And then also I wrote about Michigan this morning. Michigan-Penn State on Saturday is a big one. This is a big day.
Yeah.
I mean, this is – we don't really need to discuss – I mean, I think everyone understands it, so – go check those out. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, we'll be back to break all those down because that's a big weekend here coming up. But yeah, going forward, I think we can talk about hoops and football, whatever shows up.
Love it. Yep. All right. Well, that'll do it, folks. Enjoy your evening of hoops. Anyone from Michigan State going out to the Garden, be safe and enjoy that experience. Absolutely. Anyone from Michigan, enjoy getting back into Chrysler and stop by and say hi if you see me bouncing around. So thanks for listening. Be sure to tip your bartenders and your servers.